Our meditation today is in Psalm 56. Please turn there with me. We see the Hebrew superscription translated to us into English that is dedicated once again to the chief musician, and it's set to apparently a tune called The Silent Dove in Distant Lands, a miktam, which is a particular kind of psalm, of David when the Philistines captured him in Gath. In these trying circumstances, David was moved by the Holy Spirit to write, "Be merciful to me, O God, for man would swallow me up. Fighting all day, he oppresses me. My enemies would hound me all day, for there are many who fight against me, O Most High. Whenever I'm afraid, I will trust in you. In God, I will praise his word. In God, I have put my trust. I will not fear what can flesh do to me. All day they twist my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather together, they hide, they mark my steps. When they lie in wait for my life, shall they escape by iniquity? In anger, cast down the peoples, O God. You number my wanderings. Put my tears into your bottle. Are they not in your book? When I cry out to you, then my enemies will turn back. This I know, because God is for me. In God, I will praise his word. In the Lord, I will praise his word. In God, I have put my trust. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? Vows made to you are binding upon me, O God. I will render praises to you, for you have delivered my soul from death. Have you not kept my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? Now, as we look at this psalm, we see that the superscription, anyway, tells us of a certain historical situation. And you can read about this back in 1 Samuel. What has happened is that Jesus fled from before King Saul, who in his mental derangement and in his jealousy for his own place sought to kill David. And so David had run away. He'd gone for immediate protection to the town called Nob, where many of the priests, including the high priest at the time, lived. And there it was, and many of you know the story, that David had gone and he'd sought some help. He came with apparently just a few men, not a whole big retinue. He'd gone there and he'd asked for help. He needed food for these guys, needed food himself. Well, all there is the showbread. Well, that's fine if you're willing to do that. Well, the priest gave him of the showbread, which was only supposed to be eaten by the priests. And David asked if there were any weapons around because he'd left in haste. In fact, he told a lie that he'd been sent on a secret mission. And the high priest, Ahimelech, said, well, all that there is right now is Goliath's sword. And David said, well, that'll work. So he was armed and fed, and later he and his men quickly took off. For of all places, he had not only Goliath's sword, but he went to Goliath's hometown, city of Gath. Remember, Goliath was called Goliath of Gath. So there it was, he went, and apparently no one necessarily knew who he was. Probably someone noticed the sword. And so word got back to the king of Gath, over here, isn't that David that killed our champion Goliath? David heard about this happening and thought, I am in real trouble. I've lied my way out of things before. I know, I'll fake like I'm crazy. Maybe no one will want me. And so that's indeed what happened. When David was brought in before the king, he was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And the king of Gath said, basically, what's this? Do I need more crazy people in my country? Do I need more crazy people in my city? Just throw them out. And so David quickly left. He wasn't wanted anywhere. He was being hunted down everywhere. Now, I want to mention that I have gotten kind of hooked on a podcast. Some of you know what podcasts are. They're over the internet radio shows. And often they're on a particular topic. This one is called The Unauthorized History of the Pacific War. And I've learned a little bit about torpedo tactics, whether it's from destroyers, PT boats, submarines, airplanes, whatever. Often, if they could do it, attackers of ships with torpedoes would try to get a target ship in between two groups, say of torpedo bomber airplanes or submarines or something. And they'd shoot the torpedoes so that no way could the target ship escape. Now, they might see torpedoes coming from the port side, so they'd turn to starboard, and here's more coming in this way. It was called hammer and anvil, right? Well, this is the situation that David's in. He can't be received by his own people because Saul's after him. He can't go to the enemy because the enemy's after him. Where can he turn? Only to God. Now, it was a scary situation. Sometimes people will tell you Christians should never be scared. Well, let's face it, there are scary situations. Now, we shouldn't ever remain frightened. Maybe some of you have memorized verse 3 like me. What time I'm afraid, I will trust in thee. That's the old King James Version. And maybe some of you know, this has been floating around the internet for a bit, that it's like 365 times in the scriptures we are told, do not be afraid, or fear not, right? The people of God are told this time and again. And so when we are faced with that which is scary, when we are faced with that which has us alarmed, like Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, why, we should not remain in the fear. We should not abide in it and wallow in it and think there is no hope. That is wrong. No, what time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. So here he says this in verses 3 and 4. 1 and 2, God is cried out to, be merciful to me. And here in verses 3 and 4, David is now trusting God will take care of me. Whenever I'm afraid, as our New King James has it, I will trust in you. In God, I will praise his word. In God, I have put my trust. I will not fear. What can flesh do to me? Well, after this, he turns back to point out to God in a manner of speaking. Or maybe it's just rehearsing it over in his own mind. You've done this. I've done this. He says, all day they twist my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather together. They hide. They mark my steps when they lie in wait for my life. Shall they escape by iniquity? In anger cast down the peoples, O God. Well, the answer to that question, will they escape by iniquity? That is there lying and is there anger and is there sinful action against me, their hatred, is that going to escape judgment by God? Well, we know the answer. Nope, nope. David then encourages himself further in verses 8 and 9. You number my wanderings, put my tears into a bottle. Are they not in your book? We can be concerned. We can be doubting. We can be frightened sometime that God doesn't even know what's going on. For surely if he knew, he'd be taking care of us better. And we forget that God takes care of us best. But David reminds himself that every tear that drops down his cheeks is, figuratively speaking, put in a bottle. It's kept there, preserved there. It doesn't just fall to the ground, seep into the dirt. It doesn't just get wiped away and nothing happens. And David, in all his wanderings, having to flee from Saul, having to go to Philistia, and for many years this sort of stuff went on, God knows every step. God knows every destination. God knows and counts up, keeps accounts of every trial of his children. Not in some sort of cruel way, but because he loves them and will bring them to justice. They're written down in a book. It's kind of like a ledger, you know? And he goes on to say, when I cry out to you, then my enemies will turn back. This I know. I'm not suspecting it. I'm not guessing it's the case. I'm not merely wishing it would be. No, this I know. Why? Because God is for me. And then here he boasts in verses 10 and 11. In God, I will praise his word. He praises the revelation of God's covenant faithfulness, of God's grace there. And his word is expressive of his holy and everlasting character. So because David knows who God is, because he knows what God is like, he can, he does trust him for all the circumstances. In fact, this is kind of repeating what's up in verse 4. In God I will praise his word. In God I put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do to me. In verse 10 and 11, in God I will praise his word. In Jehovah I will praise his word. Here he's not speaking of him merely as God, but as the God of the covenant. The God whose goodness is everlasting. The God who is ever faithful. In Jehovah I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? Now, has the situation outwardly gotten any better by the time we get to verses 12 and 13? Probably not. But now David, in faith, can see the future. And what is it? Disaster for him? No. Vows made to you are binding upon me, O God. I will render praises to you for, and in that usage, children, the word for kind of means because. So we could read it, because you have delivered my soul from death. Have you not kept my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? So he knows the end of the story. And he knows that everything in between will be taken care of. It's like I was watching a movie just earlier this week that my son Isaac told me how to watch, called Sully. It's a true story about this airline pilot who, his airliner, hits a flock of geese. Both engines are destroyed. He's taken off from LaGuardia Airport in New York. He's got to land his plane somewhere. He can't get to any airport. What he has to do is land on the Hudson River. Maybe some of you remember this. It just happened in 2009. And every single person, every passenger, all the crew, everyone came out of it alive. But then he was in trouble with the federal government. There were those who said, well, he could have made it. No. Well, I knew the end of the story. But he didn't when he was in the middle of it. And actually, the movie is so well made, you get a little anxious for him, too. Well, but it all worked out. He proved that he did all the right things. And he was sustained and maintained as a hero. Here, David knows his soul has already been taken care of. God will keep his feet from falling in order that he may walk before God in the light of the living. Now, we'd mess up if we stopped there, because we must see Jesus here. David is cast out of Israel. David is sent to the midst of an unbelieving people. Here, it's pointing to Christ. Jesus, of course, as I kind of mentioned, in the Garden of Gethsemane, was not frightened, but he was kind of overwhelmed at what was about to happen to him. He'd known all along. You know this? He knew all along that he would have to go through this for you. He knew that and did it anyway. Did he want to? Yes. But it got scary to be thinking of taking on all of his Father's wrath that you deserve, that I deserve. Which is why he said, "If it's possible, Father, let this cup pass from me. But nevertheless, not your will, not my will, but your will be done." This is the whole idea, the whole attitude of David here. He is looking to the one who eventually would go through much the same. He would be rejected by his people. He would go to others and be rejected there too. But he would triumph. He would come to resurrection, which we celebrate each Sabbath day. And here we look at David looking to light. We see this there in the last verse. "I may walk before God in the light of the living." This is looking to Jesus, who is himself the light of the world, as we see in John chapter 1. And it reminds us, perhaps, of Psalm 36, where we read, "In your light we see light." Right? So it's in the light of Jesus that we understand all things. It's in the light of Jesus that we can, that we do have hope, assured hope. We know this. We know because of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection for us. We know that God is for us.